Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this morning's Jewish Ethics Lecture Series on a very fascinating and important topic that is very relevant and of great interest to many people. I'd like to begin by thanking Rabbi Rosenbaum and Shomri Emuna for being the wonderful hosts that they are for this lecture series and so many programs that that we do here. Before I introduce our speaker, I just want to draw everybody's attention to a big event that the Kol is having in White Oak on Wednesday night, our annual Hanukkah celebration, with many different features and things for the children and the adults, Torah and magic shows and delicious food and music. It's a good fun for everybody. This morning we have a great chance and opportunity to have a dynamic and scholarly speaker and a dear friend, Rabbi Moshe Walter, who's going to lend us his erudition on this important topic. And without further ado,
hey, good morning to everybody. It is a pleasure always to be able to speak at this program. Thank you, Rabbi Winter, for your kind words. The topic of truth and lying is a fascinating one. I hope I will be able to touch on a variety of aspects of the topic, and I hope we'll all walk away with a deeper understanding of the facts of truth and lying. There's a story they tell. A person came up to heaven after 120 years, very successful life. And he gets up and he walks in and he sees, when he walks into heaven, along the back tapestry, tens and hundreds and thousands of clocks. And the fellow turns to the angel and says, "What are all these clocks about?" So the angel says, "Well, these are lie clocks." "Lie clocks? What's that all about?" So he says, "Every time a person lies, the clock moves one hand." Wow, fascinating. So he looks on the wall and says, "Well, whose clock is that?" "That's Moses' clock. It never moved once. Moses never told a lie." "And whose clock is that?" "That's Abraham Lincoln's clock. Abraham Lincoln only lied twice. The clock has only moved twice." So the fellow looks and goes, "Well, where's my clock?" So he says, "It's in God's office. He's using it as a fan." So I'm here this morning not to talk about our own personal lie clock, but I'd like to talk a little bit about how God decides if the clock moves. Now, I think we would all agree that it's self-evident that truth is something critical to this world. Truth promotes honesty, it promotes understanding. Without truth, probably any business, government, judicial system, family system would be unsustainable. There needs to be an element of belief, trust, and truth that exists between human beings, otherwise the world will totally fall apart and collapse. Chazal, in the first opening chapter of Maseches Avos, said this in a very pithy statement, when they said that the world stands upon three things, and one of those is truth, ala emet. The world needs truth. Without truth, there will be absolutely impossible to be anarchy and chaos. Truth is an absolute. Not only is the world need to be sustained and is sustained on truth, but the entire world is actually built on truth. The Maharsha in Maseches Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Zayin comments that the first three words of the Torah, the last letter in each of those three words, Bereshit ends with a Saf, Bara ends with a Aleph, Elokim ends with a Mem, the last three words and the first three words of the Torah have MS in it. That means the world was created, built on truth. The last three words in the story of creation, Bara, Elokim, La'asos, also end. Aleph, Mem, Saf, and the Maharsha explains that the world that God built was built upon trust, was built upon truth, it's sustained upon truth. And more than that, of course, we all know it through Imitatio Dei, our responsibility in this world is to imitate God. And just like God is truth, so too we are required to be truthful people. Interestingly enough, although truth is such a basic element, there's no independent mitzvah, no positive commandment in the entire Torah that tells us to speak the truth. There's no positive commandment, none, that says that man should tell the truth. There's only one negative commandment in the entire Torah that speaks to some level of truth or the opposite of or deviation from truth, and that's if you take a look in source number one, in the second pasuk that's quoted, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, which literally means stay far away, distance yourself from falsehood. Now, it's interesting to note the placement of this pasuk in the Torah. It's found in Parshas Mishpatim, in between two bookends, talking about judicial system, talking about truth, talking about lies, is all found within the construct of a courtroom and within the construct of judges and the responsibility that judges have. And for example, Osat Mishpat Evyon Chabrivo, one shouldn't lean in one particular direction toward a plaintiff or toward a defendant. You have to go into the case with an open mind. The latter pasuk, Shochad Lo Sikach, a judge is required not to be bribed or not to take a bribe. And part of the responsibilities of a judge, part of the responsibilities of a judicial system in a courtroom, is also that truth should be spoken by plaintiffs, defendants, and the judges themselves must and are required, actually, to go into the courtroom with an element of appreciation of the truth. It's for that reason, actually, the Gemara in Masechta Shavuos and Daf Lamed Aleph, as well as a group of Rishonim, including the Rambam and the Sefer Chinuch, all posit that there is no negative commandment of distancing oneself from the truth outside of the courtroom. That means the concept of truth versus lies and distancing oneself from lies is only limited to the courtroom. Now, that doesn't mean it's a good thing to lie, and it doesn't mean that it's a good thing not to tell the truth. But nonetheless, the way the rabbis, Chazal, and the Rishonim understand, the lion's share of Rishonim, rather, understand that the essence of lying is something that's limited to the courtroom. However, not all Rishonim take that approach. There's a smag and a smach to the classic money and mitzvot, who understand actually that it goes well beyond the courtroom. That's telling the truth, and specifically distancing oneself from fallacy, is something that extends well beyond the courtroom as well. The Chafetz Chaim, in concluding his essay on the topic of truth and lies, understands that it absolutely is a positive, negative, it's a negative commandment, one of the 613, not to tell a lie and to distance oneself from the truth even outside of a courtroom. If you take a look at the pasuk, the word that's used to define lying is actually rachok. Rachok means far, to distance oneself. And the Sefer Chinuch understands that this is one of very few times you'll see in the five books of Moses, in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, that the word rachok is used. The fact that the word rachok, distance oneself, is used in this context speaks to the importance and the significance of telling the truth and distancing oneself from fallacy. Midvar sheker tirchak. In order to focus our discussion this morning, what I would like to do is try to attack five questions. And I hope if we're successful by the end of the morning, we'll be able to answer these five questions. They're five practical questions that I think probably come up for most of us throughout the course of our day, week, year. Things that we've found ourselves in a difficult situation about and wonder how we should respond. Let's just go through these five basic questions that we'll try to unravel this morning. The first question, if one is asked, what does a person think of me? And one knows that the person thinks negatively of you, is it permissible to tell that individual that the person thinks highly of him? And we all bump into this all the time. You're in the streets, you're in the grocery store, wherever you are, and you're talking to somebody, and the person says, yeah, I see that person over there. What does he or she think of me? You know for sure that that person has a negative impression. Can you tell the individual you're speaking to, no, that person thinks you're great, you're terrific, you're wonderful, when you in fact know that that individual thinks very negatively of the individual you're talking to? Question number one. Question number two, if one is uninterested in lending a friend money or any other matter, is it permitted to say, I don't have any money to lend you? Question number three, if one is not interested in receiving guests, are family members permitted to say that one is not home? Question number four, if one is not interested in eating a dish that was prepared, is one permitted to say, I am not hungry? And finally, on the topic of food, if one didn't like the taste of a particular dish that was served, is one permitted to say that the food was delicious? Five questions. The traditional and classic dictionary definition, this is almost the Webster's definition of truth, is exactitude in relating an event or faithfulness to fact or reality. If you were to ask Mrs. Merriam-Webster, Mr. Merriam-Webster, I don't know. To answer any of these five questions, the dictionary definition would tell us that we would have to be able to record the truth of that which happened. If you didn't like the dish, I would be forced to say, no, I don't like the dish. If you are hungry, but you don't like what's being served, you'd have to say, sorry, I am hungry, but I don't like the dish that you're serving. If you're hiding upstairs in your room and you don't want to visit from the individuals knocking on the door, you'd have to tell the person, he's upstairs, but he really doesn't want to see you. That would seem to be the classic and traditional approach to answer this question, and indeed, I would like this morning to try to discover whether or not the traditional and classic dictionary definition of truth really fits the halachic definition of truth, whether it's in sync with the dictionary definition of truth, and whether or not there are exceptions to the rule as well. The first case that I'd like to share with you is the Gemara Maseches Yevamos. It's the second source on your paper, Daf Samachei Mebeis. It is probably the most important Gemara on the topic. Can everybody hear me? Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. It's probably the most important source on the topic of deviation from the truth, and the Gemara says the following. Mutilo la'adam l'shanos b'davar shalom. An individual is permitted to deviate from the truth for the sake of peace. Now the Gemara brings three proof texts to this point. Point number one. Shenema, avicha tzivcha lemur, kosomru l'yosef ana sana pesha. We're going to read this in just a few weeks in Parshas Vayechi. Of course, we find ourselves now in the Parshas of Yosef and his brothers. We all know what the brothers did to Yosef, telling him. And there was a terrible fear that the brothers had once their father Yaakov died, that now is Yosef's opportunity to really get the brothers back. This is his chance, and he's going to, Yosef, now that Yaakov is no longer, and the family structure has changed, and Yosef is no longer concerned that his father Yaakov is here, and his father Yaakov was protecting the family, now is Yosef's big chance and big opportunity that he could take over his brothers and really execute retribution for everything that they did. What did the brothers do? The brothers, after the death of Yaakov, presented the following statement to their brother Yosef and said that our father told us that you should forgive us for everything that we did. Now I challenge you to scour Sefer Bereishis and to find where Yaakov said that he should, and the brothers should tell Yosef that they should forgive their brother. You will not find any textual proof to this point. In no way, or no statement that at least we're familiar with in Torah Shabbat Sad, did Yaakov ever tell the brothers that they should forgive Yosef for what he did wrong. How could the brothers tell Yosef that our father said to us that you should be should forgive us for everything that we did? He never said that. So the Gemara understands from here that mutul adam l'shanos b'davar shalom. It's permitted to deviate from the truth for the sake of peace because the brothers were frightened. They thought that Yosef was going to kill them, or they thought that Yosef would never speak to them again. And they wanted to maintain some sort of familial harmony and some sort of semblance of peace in the family. The Gemara understands from here, you see, that's permitted to deviate from the truth for the sake of maintaining peace. Point number one. Point number two, Rav Nassan Omer Mitzvah. Rav Nassan argues on the opinion, on the first opinion, and Rav Nassan posits that not only is it permitted, but it's a mitzvah, it's a mandate. You're required to veer and to deviate for the sake of truth in order to maintain peace. Says Rav Nassan, how do you know that? So it's a case in Tanakh. Shmuel, we're all familiar, was required and was told by God to anoint David HaMelech as king of Israel. Shmuel was frightened for his life. What was going to happen? Shaul was going to kill him. Shaul wanted to be king of Israel. So Shmuel turns to God and says to God, God, you want me to anoint David, Melech Yisrael? Shaul is going to kill me. He's going to attack me. He's going to challenge me. I can't do this. Listen what God tells Shmuel. And Rashi quotes it, and Rashi explains that Shmuel is told by God to tell David that all the festivities and the sacrifices that are being brought and the party that's being given in honor of David has nothing to do with David. It's simply sacrifices that Shmuel is telling Shaul to bring in the Mishkan, and there's sacrifices and special activities that are going on that day. But nothing to do with the fact that David has been anointed king of Israel. From here, the opinion of Rav Nassan is that not only is it permitted, but it's a mitzvah. Why is it a mitzvah? God told Shmuel to deviate and to veer from telling the truth to David in order that David doesn't become overwhelmed and ultimately take advantage of the situation, and as a result of Shmuel being frightened by Shaul, he was permitted to lie, to deviate from telling the truth, to veer from telling the truth, in order not to get Shaul unnerved, upset, and angered. Here you see it's a mitzvah. Finally, the third case we read a few weeks ago in the Torah, Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Gadol HaShalom, peace is so great, it's so critical, that even God himself deviated from telling the truth. What does it say? Sha'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shina, Zimi Kara Ksiv Adoni Zaked, Ula Besov Ksiv Ani Zakati. You're all familiar with the dialogue between Abraham and Sarah and God regarding the possibility of Sarah giving birth at an old age. And Sarah says, I can't be, it's impossible. How can I give birth? My husband is so old. Adoni Zaked. And God relates back to Avram that Sarah never said that Avraham is aged, but rather Ani Zakati, that I am old. The Gemara puts forth three very, very important proofs, both from the opinion of Reb Nathan, the opinion of the Tanakhama, the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, that for the sake of deviating from the truth, for the sake of peace, one is permitted to deviate from the truth. These kind of things come up daily, weekly, in our lives, either in family situations, in situations dealing with colleagues, in situations dealing with friends and acquaintances, where if I'm to tell the truth about a particular situation, that could cause a total breakdown, and that could cause a family structure to fall apart. That could cause friends to be separated. That could cause friction, an enormous level of friction. From here, the Gemara seems to indicate on one of two accounts, either it's permitted or it's a mandate. What I'd like to discuss also is whether or not we paskin like the first opinion and go on to the second opinion. Is there permission or is it a mandate? If it's a mandate, that's quite different than the classical, traditional approach to telling the truth. Any time that there is an element of peace that's meant to be kept, I'm required. There's a mandate. There's an absolute responsibility and requirement for me to deviate from telling the truth. On the other hand, it would be permitted. But here you see on one basis, on one level, there's the ability to veer and to deviate from telling the truth for the sake of peace. Take a look at source number two. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Chav Gimel on the Beis. Shmuel makes the following statement and says, "Bahani tlat mili avidi rabbanon demishani milahi." Rabbinical scholars are accustomed to deviating from telling the truth in three particular areas: Meseches, Puraya, and Ushpiza. They're difficult words, and they're showing themselves, Rashi, Tosfos, and others, debate what the definition of these three things are. Meseches is the simplest, of course, that means a tractate, that a rabbinical scholar is permitted to deviate from telling the truth if he's asked whether or not he has mastered a particular tractate. Out of a sense of modesty, I don't have to respond to that question. So I'm asked, did you finish Meseches Baba Basra? Are you an expert in that particular Mesechta? Rabbinical scholar can push the question aside, say, nah, I don't know it, I never studied it, I'm not familiar with it, I learned it, I touched on it, but I didn't cover, and I'm not an expert in it. Therefore, for the sake of modesty, one is permitted to deviate from telling the truth. The second area that the Gemara notes that rabbinical scholars deviate in is puraya. It's relating to private affairs, any intimate matters. A rabbinic scholar is not required to answer a question. When it comes to matters of privacy, matters of intimacy, one is not required to answer the question. I have my private life, and not everything has to be in a fishbowl. I don't have to share information. Even if I am questioned specifically about a particular area, I'm not required to tell the truth as well. Finally, ushpiza is the last area where rabbinical scholars have veered and do deviate from telling the truth, is in matters relating to others. I don't have to share where I was the recipient of high hosting. If I stayed in somebody's home and I was the recipient of enormous hospitality, the meals were delicious, the beds were comfortable, I was taken care of so well, if somebody asked me, well, where did you stay the other week? Where did you stay over Shabbos? I'm not required, and I can deviate from telling the truth in order that the host does not become attacked by everybody else. You know, you live in Washington or in various areas that are comfortable, that many people are coming to visit. So it's very common that people want to just simply, you know, keep on knocking on your door to come for Shabbos. You're not required, and you're permitted to deviate from telling the truth, and you do not have to tell, and maybe you should not tell, as we'll see, where you're stayed in order not to set up the situation where others will also start knocking down on the person's door. Now, it's interesting to note, here the Gemara refers to this being a permissibility for a rabbinical scholar. Most achronim understand that not only is this true when it comes to rabbinical scholars, it's true to lay people as well. Today we don't have the halachic definition of a Talmud Chacham, of a Rabbanan, the way that the Gemara says. Chavetz Chaim and others understand that this today contemporarily is true for all individuals. Everybody has the ability to deviate from telling the truth when it comes to areas of privacy, when it comes to areas of modesty, and when it comes to areas of confidentiality. That's my free translation for these three areas: privacy, confidentiality, and modesty. The question is, what's the basis of the permissibility to deviate from telling the truth in these three areas? What's the nature of the ability that one has to change? We can understand when it comes to pieces are very important. But why confidentiality, privacy, modesty, do those allow one to execute veering and deviating from telling the truth? If you take a look in the fourth source, Tosfos questions this Gemara and asks, why did the Gemara only tell us three specific areas, modesty, privacy, and confidentiality? There should be a fourth. We all saw the first Gemara in Meseches Yivamos and Daf Samechei. The first source tells us you're permitted to deviate for the truth for the sake of peace. So why did the Gemara only tell us three cases? The Gemara should have told us four cases. So Tosfos in source number four tells us V'hadalo chashiv hacha mutter l'shanas p'nei darkei shalom. They should have also added a fourth clause, a fourth caveat, a fourth contingency. Why only three? So Tosfos answers Mishum dahani nami mishum darkei shalom. These categories listed in the Gemara and Bava Metzia, modesty, privacy, and confidentiality, are also under the general umbrella of shalom. They're all peaceful areas. Modesty, privacy, and confidentiality, they fall under the general umbrella leniency of peacefulness, and therefore, as a result, you're permitted to do so. Asks Tosfos, if that's the case, why did we limit these three? Why did the Torah go out of its way? Why did the Gemara go out of its way to articulate these three? Tosfos says, Mishum regilim heim yosem acherim. This is common case throughout the course of our day. The most common things and situations that we bump into throughout our daily activities is modesty, privacy, and confidentiality. So the Gemara decided to speak to the most practical things that we run into on a daily basis, but recognizes, Tosfos, that this is all under the cause of darkei shalom. Therefore, what we have so far is that when it comes to maintaining peace, to promoting peace, one is permitted to deviate from telling the truth. The Rif, in source number 5, argues, and the Rif says there's a categorical and fundamental difference between sources 2 and 3, between the Gemara in Yevamos and the Gemara in Bava Metzia. And if you read the Gemara carefully, the Rif says, you'll note the following. The first case, the Gemara in Yevamos, regarding deviating for the sake of peace, there it's a mitzvah. It's a mandate. It's a commandment. It's a requirement. However, in source number 4, the Gemara in Meseches Bava Metzia, there it's not a mitzvah, it's not a mandate, it's not a commandment, but rather it's a heter. There's a permissibility. So the Rif understands that there's a difference between Yevamos and Bava Metzia. What the Rif understands is that when it comes to talking about peace, promoting peace, maintaining peace, that's such an important issue, that's so crucial to the well-being of families, of individuals, of people, of communities, of organizations, that for the sake of peace, it's a mandate, it's a mitzvah to lie. When it comes to confidentiality, when it comes to privacy, when it comes to matters of modesty, that's a whole different level. That has nothing to do with peace. That's a sense of awkwardness, it's a sense of uncomfortability. So it's not a mandate and a mitzvah and a commandment to veer or to deviate from telling the truth in those situations, but rather it's only a heter, it's only a permissibility. And that's what the Rif says in source number 5, Mistabrilat, the Haidalo Choshiv Ha Bahadi Hanach. Why did we not include the case of Yevamos as part of the case of Meseches Bava Metzia? Mishum the Hailot Strichalei, the mitzvahi. When it comes to deviating for the sake of truth, for peace, it's a commandment. It's a mitzvah. It's a mandate. You got to maintain and promote peace in this world. That's a godly thing to do. That's a humane thing to do. Therefore, promoting peace is so critical. It's a mandate and it's a commandment to tell. I deviate from telling the truth for the sake of peace. However, the cases of modesty, the cases of privacy and confidentiality, those are rishos. Those are not mandatory to tell, to deviate from telling the truth. That allows you wiggle room. But I can get out of it. And if it's possible not to do so, better not to do so. So thus far we see, certainly the global umbrella heter is peace, but the Rif recognizes that the cases of modesty, privacy, and confidentiality have nothing to do with promoting peace, but rather have to do simply with the fact that maintaining modesty, maintaining privacy and maintaining confidentiality, those in and of themselves are so crucial, so critical, that I'm permitted to tell that I'm permitted to deviate from telling the truth, but not that I'm required to do so. Now, of course, these types of things come up regularly as well. We're asked questions that I feel are matters of privacy. I have information that may be confidential, and there are certain matters of intimacy, or there's certain matters of privacy, or of confidentiality, of modesty that I don't want to share with the world. I'm permitted to deviate from telling the truth in any of those circumstances, even if I'm asked directly about it. I'm permitted to deviate, and it's critical to recognize. Now, it doesn't mean it's a mitzvah that I should find everybody and start approaching people and to try telling people things that are not true for the sake of doing that. That's not a mitzvah. But it's permitted if I'm put on the spot, because that's not something that I'm required to share with the world when it comes to these three matters. The Sefer Chassidim, Rav Yehuda Chassid, very important work, an early work of the Rishonim, a late Gaon, expresses this a bit differently. And he says, in source number 6, Yochol Adam L'Shaker Kedei Shlo Yizvayish Chavero. One is permitted to deviate from telling the truth, and the language that he actually uses is l'shaker. One is permitted to lie in order to stave off your friend from embarrassment. So that could find ourselves in a situation where somebody asks a question to me about a particular situation, and I'm familiar with the facts about a certain case, but if it's going to cause embarrassment to the individual that I'm dealing with, or the individual that I was questioned about, I don't have to tell the truth, and more than that, I can lie. Sefer Chassidim brings a variety of examples. The most interesting one that he brings is the first in the Navi, in Ezra. Ezra was dealing with a community. Klal Yisrael, of course, was dispersed and were found themselves in the Golos. Ezra was successful in bringing the Jewish people back to the land of Israel, and he found himself in a community where a lot of intermarriage was rampant, and there was a significant amount of intermarriage. And Ezra needed to chastise the community, and needed to uplift the community and to talk to them about this critical area. And he says, "Anachnu heishavnu nashim nachriot." We have taken non-Jewish women. Now, Ezra never married a non-Jew, but Ezra recognized that in order not to embarrass the people, and in order to succeed in uplifting the people and helping them recognize where they erred, he himself would also have to include himself in saying that he also took for himself a non-Jewish wife, which was not true. The Sefer Chassidim brings a variety of other examples. An interesting case where Shmuel HaKatan and a variety of rabbis were invited to a particular party. 7 people were invited and 8 individuals attended. And somebody blurted out, who wasn't invited? And Shmuel HaKatan responded by saying, "Ani halesi shelo bershus." I came uninvited, I came unannounced, when indeed somebody else came unannounced and he didn't want to embarrass that person. So we see when it comes to cases of embarrassment, that not only was one permitted to save oneself from embarrassment, like we saw when it comes to privacy, confidentiality, and modesty, but I'm permitted to lie to protect somebody else's embarrassment as well. And again, there are a gamut of situations and cases that come up regularly in our lives and days where saving another from embarrassment, saving ourselves from embarrassment, comes up as well. The last case that I'd like to draw to your attention, certainly in primary sources, in Chazal, is a Gemara in Ksuvah. Some of you may be familiar. It's a popular song today. Ketzad miraktim lefnei hakala. How is one supposed to dance in front of the bride? Now, Rashi and most Rishonim understand that that's not talking literally, you know, do you do the kazatska or, you know, another move. That the Gemara wasn't addressing that. But the Gemara says, what should I tell the bride in front of her new husband? How should I speak to her? What should I praise her with? So Beis Shammai's opinion, kala kamoshi, say it like it is. You know, whatever you think, whatever you feel appropriate, whatever is correct, exactitude, faithfulness to facts or reality, that's what you should say. However, Beis Hillel says the opposite. And Beis Hillel says, and that's why it became the song, kala na v'chasuda. The kala, the bride, is beautiful, she's delightful, she's wonderful, terrific. Beis Shammai turns to Beis Hillel and says, hare shahaisa chigeres usuma. Let's say she's lame. Let's say she's blind. Are you also going to say, kala na the chasuda? Is that truth? Is that being faithful to fact or reality? Is that appropriate, says Beis Shammai to Beis Hillel? V'hatora amma midvar sheker tirchak. Don't you know, we saw this at the outset of this year, the Torah says, distance yourself from fallacy.
How can you say that about a lame, a blind, or somebody who does not have that delightful demeanor?
Amulem Beisol Beishamet. Turn the page. Beisol responds to Beishamet, says, Lidvarecha, according to you, Mi Shalakach Mekach Raman Ashok, somebody who goes shopping, picks up a new suit or a new dress, Yeshabchenu Beinav or Yeganenu Beinav, should you say, what a lovely, beautiful suit, how nice is your dress, or how inappropriate, that doesn't look good on you, it's not befitting. Of course you should say, you look delightful, you look wonderful, that's such a nice, pretty dress, that's such a nice looking brand new suit you got. Mikan amru chachamim, from here the rabbis taught, le'olam teidaito shel adam me'urevet imabriot, a person should always be able to be comfortable, and a person should always be able to say appropriate things amongst people. We paskin, of course, like Beis Hillel, and this is paskin in Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezra Siman Samachay, that when it comes to a bride, and in Eben and Choshen Mishpat it's true as well, when it comes to a person, an individual who asks you after the fact, once you already made the purchase, at that point you should tell them, nice dress, nice suit, nice tie, nice house, nice car. Now, if it's prior to the actual acquisition or the transaction, and you think you could be of help to the individual, say, you know what, maybe it doesn't look good on you. Maybe the car is not so great. Maybe this house is not perfect for you. Absolutely, positively, you should do that. But once the transaction, once the acquisition has already been made, at that point, the rule of thumb is, the rabbis teach, you should always have a good composure with people. Again, you see that truth, certainly and from the halachic realm, and we'll discuss this as we continue, is not faithfulness and exactitude to fact and reality. Because if it's a chigeres or a suma, if it's a mekach ra, if it's something that's inappropriate, something that doesn't look good, something that either is not physically appropriate or the appearance is not the way it's supposed to be, there an individual is required, and it seems to be a mitzvah in this context, to deviate from telling the truth. Again, the question is, what's the basis of this heter? I mean, truth is truth, and non-truth is non-truth. How are we permitted to deviate? So the Ritva, commenting on this Gemara, says it all goes back to the first source, that the rule of thumb is, when it comes to darkei shalom, ein bo mishum midvar shaker tircha. Any time it comes to any element of peace, promoting peace, maintaining peace, you're permitted to deviate from telling the truth. So in a variety of scenarios, if somebody asks you something about himself or herself, and you have an opportunity to bring out and to make a person feel better about himself or herself, you're permitted to deviate from telling the truth. Somebody asks, you know, how was the rabbi's lecture today? It was horrible. Oh, it was great, terrific, wonderful. Somebody asks, you know, how do I look? How am I doing? They're on a diet. You look wonderful, even though they haven't lost an ounce. One will be permitted to deviate from telling the truth. Kalana the chasudu would speak to the fact that even when it's a mekach ra, even when it's an acquisition that is not wonderful, even when it's a bride that's not delightful, at the end of the day, one is permitted in order to promote peace, in order to make a person feel better, in order to comfort somebody. In a variety of situations, you could have somebody who's not feeling well, somebody who's sick. One will be permitted to tell a person, you look great, you look terrific, you're looking so much better today. You have somebody who's emotionally going through a difficult time. It looks like you're feeling much better. You're acting different. You're out and about. Even though those things aren't true. But if you have the opportunity to gladden somebody or to comfort somebody, it's permitted to deviate from telling the truth in order to promote peace or to maintain peace. So just to review where we have so far, we have three sources. We have a Gemara in Maseches Yevamos and Daf Samachay. We have a Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Chavez. And a Gemara in Ksuvos and Daf Yudzayin. They have three different scenarios where one is permitted to deviate from telling the truth. What seems to be the general broad reason for permitting all of these is because of shalom, peace. Maintaining peace is such a critical thing, and promoting peace is so critical that you're permitted from deviating from telling the truth. Now, as we noted, the Rif understands the Gemara Bava Metzia a little bit differently, that has nothing to do with shalom, but rather has to do with when it comes to issues of modesty, confidentiality, and privacy, that since those are areas where one may feel awkward or embarrassed sharing that type of information, I'm not required to share that particular information. That's what we have thus far. Are there any questions at this point? Yeah.
So, for example, in order to save someone, a third party can embarrass them. One will
Yes.
And therefore, the risk is unavoidable.
Yes.
Or something is a trade-off.
Good question. Okay, I hope in the practical examples that I gave, I'll be able to address that particular point. That question comes up probably most when it comes to issues of dating and sharing information, what you can share, what you can't share. There's actually a lot of halakhic literature about that. If you know facts about a particular situation, what are you permitted to share? But it's going to embarrass somebody. How do you deal with that? I hope we'll get to that. Yeah?
The difference between promoting peace and maintaining peace. In the cases of the original, the first person in the development, there was a threat to peace, and then the lie was made to maintain. Are you, some of the examples you've given, are you going out of your way to extend it and, do a positive thing when the situation was neutral?
Correct.
But now you're going above and
correct. I'm using maintaining and promoting equally, and that there is no difference. Shalom is either can be used to promote peace or to maintain peace. You're right. The examples that the Gemara gives, and one could argue even in the first case with Yosef and his brothers, and some Rishonim are bothered by this, that's not an issue of peace. That's an issue of pikuach nefesh. They were frightened for their lives. Many Rishonim say that that's not a valuable proof, and you can't use that. And certainly you could lie or deviate from telling the truth for the sake of saving your life. That's an absolute. But in this particular case, I'm using maintaining peace and promoting peace equally. Yes, everyone?
The risk clearly makes two distinct risks of Dr. Shalom in the other two categories.
Right.
And the question is that for Shalom is a mitzvah and the other two is a shush.
Good.
How can you put them together as one category?
Right.
Is it obviously they're going to have the same din as far as being a shush or a mitzvah?
Yeah. This,
which way is it?
You're saying what's the halachic? Tosfos, I don't have clear. It's an excellent question. I thought about that question a lot. I don't know if Tosfos holds it's a mitzvah or a shuf. The riff you have clear, you know what it is. Halach lamais, you'll see when we get to at the end where we follow. And interestingly enough, you shall be aware, there's no Shulchan Aruch on truth and lying. You can't open up any of the four sections of Shulchan Aruch, Mor Chaim, Til, Choshem Mishpat, but there's no siman that talks about truth and lying, which makes this topic that much more complicated. The machlokus between the riff and Tosos, whether it's a mitzvah, mandate or commandment to deviate, or whether it's a permissibility, is not explicitly ruled upon. So much so, and I'll get to it in a moment, even the Chafetz Chaim in a variety of different places seems to indicate one and both. So it's not clear. Yeah?
You might have
a question. Oh, well, you asked your friend.
Yes. First, I think I've heard you say it in the three cases where you would be embarrassed to tell the information,
yeah,
that you're permitted. But that's different from the case where the person on whom you're reporting.
Correct.
So they both apply equally,
yeah,
correctly.
So the Gemara says it only when it applies to me, right? I'm embarrassed. I don't want to share private, confidential, or information that I want to get out. That the Gemara says you're permitted to deviate. The Sefer Hasidim says I have other cases that the Gemara didn't deal with, that I'm even permitted, which one would argue is more obvious, that I'm permitted to deviate from telling the truth in order not to embarrass somebody else.
The other question, where Hashem tells Shmuel to tell Saul an untruth, and we seem to be blurring the question, is it a mitzvah to deviate here? Hashem.
That's right. And therefore, from here we see it's a mitzvah. If Hashem did it, it's a mitzvah. The way that we've shown him understand that proof, what's the difference between mutter and mitzvah? The first case is when we're dealing with the brothers and Yosef. It's permitted. They wanted to save themselves. But if God is telling Shmuel to lie to Shaul, must be it's a mitzvah.
In that case, it's a mitzvah. How do we learn it in general?
Good question. So what we have to do, and this is really Rabbi Winter's question, how do we paskin lahalacha? Is it a mandate to lie to promote peace or to maintain peace, or is it a permissibility to do so? And by the end of the class this morning, I hope we'll get the answer to that question.
Taking this one specific case where Hashem commands,
fair,
that we can murder Shem.
Good question. And that's part of the complication of this topic, and it's really not clear in even contemporary halachic literature whether it's a mandate or whether it's a permissibility, because there's no psak. In the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, David.
I feel like a lot of these things that we know are certainly there's even like a little bit of a subject about truth. For example, if you say somebody who is the guest who's upstairs who doesn't maybe doesn't want to see the business, right? They all, maybe the truth is they don't want to see the business, or maybe the truth is, well, actually they kind of do, but they just don't feel well. Right? And both of these things could be true.
Yeah.
So how can we say that,
excellent. So I think everybody's sort of touching on the same issue here, and the is it a mandate or is it a heter? And I'm going to get to that. I hope with the examples that we see, I'm going to flesh that out. Are you required, must you, or are you just able to, or is there a, you know, a comfortable middle ground? Yeah. Yes. Very good. Excellent question. Excellent question. I've been speaking about this in shul a little bit, and yesterday someone came over and goes, be prepared, somebody's going to ask you this question. So I'm prepared for this question, and I hope in the examples and the questions that I will touch upon that as well. You're right. And you'll see with some of the resolutions, it also leaves a lot of room for flexibility. I mean, we have not seen a clear algorithm yet for permission, requirement, mandate, when and how. That we haven't seen. I put out some basic concepts in terms of when you're permitted. How we're going to play that out and how we're going to be able to use it, that's going to be in the cases that we get. Yeah. Very good. That's already a philosophical question. You'll see in the last source I quote Rabbi Dessler, Michtam Eliyahu, who touches upon this. What's really the truth? You're talking to a person who's very sensitive to halacha. The way I was taught and studied that, whatever the halacha is, that's the truth. Whatever we think is truth or reality in the global world, halacha defines what's truth. So if I'm permitted to say kala nava chasuda, that's the truth. Now it happens to be that some rishonim understand the nosakelman shulchan aruch, the chalkas mechokik, the beishmul. So even when you say kala nava chasuda, you know what it could be saying? You could be saying that she's nava chasuda with her midos. She has lovely characteristic traits. That could be something. So we're going to have to touch upon that as well. But your point is well taken. Okay, so maybe we'll please. No. Everybody. It's a high level of piety to do such a thing. You're not required to do that. The high level of piety to take the onus of doing something that you're really not required to. That's a pious thing to do. Are you required to do it? You're not required to do it. You may want to, sidestep and get out of the situation by doing that, but you're not required to do that. Okay, what I'd like to do, and now that we saw these three Gemaras, is to try to explain to you a little bit of the background behind the heter of Lashanos Mipnei HaShalom. What is this all about? How are you able to do it? I'd like to show these three approaches this morning. I think one is technical, one is lumdish, and one is philosophical. But I'm going to share with you three approaches in terms of how to understand why deviating from the truth under certain circumstances and with the contingencies that we talked about this far is permitted. If you take a look in the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, and Oath Test, source number 9, Rabbeinu Yonah at the end of his Shari Tshuva has something called the Kaf Shakranim, the group of liars. And he has 9 different categories of liars. And one group of liars is the following. Take a look in source number 9. He says, is a person who lies, on the first line, Hameshaker b'sipur ha'dvar ma'asher shama, person lies regarding relating particular information, umachlif k'tsasa miskadeh, and intentionally deviates from the truth. And listen to this. V'ein lo to'elis b'shkarav, there's no reason, there's no benefit by doing so. V'lo hefsei l'zulaso, and there's no loss to the other person by doing it. There's 2 caveats here that Rabbeinu Yonah says. Number 1, I'm lying, but it's not benefiting me, and it's not hurting the other person. So Rabbeinu Yonah says about such a person, no, that's not great. That's not such a wonderful thing to do. We call you a liar. You're in the category of liars. But if you continue, he says, under those circumstances, it's permitted to deviate from telling the truth for the sake of peace and for the sake of modesty, confidentiality, and privacy. And he refers to the 2 Gemaras that we quoted, the Gemara in Yevamos and the Gemara in Masechet Bava Metzia, that ultimately you're permitted to lie because of a technicality. There's no benefit. I'm not gaining anything when I am lying and I'm deviating from telling the truth vis-a-vis privacy, confidentiality, or embarrassment and the like. When it comes to promoting or maintaining peace, I'm not gaining anything from that, not gaining anything tangible, and the other guy's not losing anything. When it comes to that particular situation, says Rabbeinu Yonah, not only is it permitted, it's mutter and it's a mitzvah l'shanos mifnei ha-shalom. Take a look how Rabbeinu Yonah says this. In the third line, it says, Zehachela kitiru, this particular cat, this group of liars, when you're not benefiting and the other person is not losing anything, kitiru v'kai mitzvah u'grishas tova v'shalom. You're permitted to deviate from the truth in that particular circumstance because you're benefiting and promoting peace. That's the case in the Sechah Sufa that we discussed. Even though the woman is a chigeres or a suma, she's lame or she's blind, you're permitted to do that. That was the case with Yosef and the brothers. So Rabbeinu Yonah understands that there's a technicality, there's a glitch. If you're dealing with a case where there's no benefit for the person who's deviating from telling the truth, and there's no loss to the individual you're speaking about, those cases you're permitted to deviate from telling the truth because you're promoting peace, you're maintaining peace, it's a wonderful thing to do. I didn't do anything wrong. It's true. I'm not faithful to fact or reality. There's no exactitude when I'm relating events, so maybe according to the dictionary definition of truth, or the traditional definition of truth, that doesn't exist. But here you would see that halacha is not in sync, or the opposite. The Webster's dictionary definition is not in sync with halacha when it comes to deviating from telling the truth for the sake of promoting or maintaining peace, because in these particular circumstances, if I'm not gaining anything, and if you're not losing anything, why not create the semblance of peace and comfort and happiness and harmony in the world? That's the approach Rabbeinu Yonah takes. Point number 1. Point number 2. Ruchama Wasserman, Hashem Yikom Dama. Rabbi Wasserman, if you're familiar, was murdered by the Nazis, Al Kiddush Hashem, in Kovna, in the 9th Fort. And Rabbi Wasserman has a classic work called Kobe Ta'aras, a Masechet Yevamos. And Rabbi Wasserman explains as follows. He says that all interpersonal negative commandments, for example, you're prohibited from hating somebody. Lo sisna sachicha bilvavecha. You're permitted from saying slander. Lo seilech rachil be'amecha. You're prohibited from a variety of negative interpersonal commandments. I can't aggrieve another person. That's called ona'as dvarim. Rabbi Wasserman, Hashem Yikom Damam, explains that all negative interpersonal mitzvot are only prohibited when I'm doing it for no reason. For no reason whatsoever. I'm prohibited from hating somebody for no reason. Says Rabbi Chanan, but if you have good reason to hate that person, because there are qualities and things about that individual that are inappropriate, that are wrong, you're permitted to hate that person. It's prohibited to slander. It's asr, lo seilech rachi, lashon hara rechilas is asr. But about particular individuals, if the individual is a menace to society, physically or emotionally, I can speak about that person. I can protect people. When is it prohibited to speak slander? When there's no benefit. When I'm doing it for no reason. But if there's due cause, because there's a good reason for it, I'm permitted to do so. The same thing, says Rabbi Chanan, would be true, even though he doesn't use this explicitly, would be true when it comes to telling the falsity. For example,
the reason that it's prohibited to lie is only for no reason. What am I doing? Why am I lying? I'm lying for no reason? That's wrong. That's midvar sheker tircha. But if there's a reason to deviate from telling the truth, that's the rabbis never prohibited. The late Mashkiach Lemir Yeshiva, before the war, the name of Rabbi Yerucham Lavavitch, he gave a mashal, a parable, to try to explain Rabbi Yerucham. He said that when he was a young man, the doctor prohibited him from drinking coffee. But he realized that the doctor only prohibited him from drinking coffee because of the caffeine that was in it. So he could drink coffee that's decaf. So Rabbi Yerucham recognized, it's not the coffee that is hurting me, but it's the caffeine that's bothering me. So Rabbi Yerucham said, it's prohibited to lie. But what's prohibited about a lie? It's the caffeine that's in it. If the problem is when I'm doing it for no reason, for no cause. But if you take the caffeine out, and if you move the no cause, and there is a good reason to lie, at that reason it's permitted to lie if there is for the sake of maintaining peace, promoting peace, for the sake of confidentiality, privacy, modesty, not embarrassing somebody else. So the Chanan gives you a very, very academic reason to explain Pesukim in the Torah. And he says, when the Torah says you can't hate somebody, that's for no reason. I can't just look at you and hate you. But if you did something to me, that's a good reason that I should hate you. Or if you did something in the world that's hatred, or if you spoke about somebody in an inappropriate way, then I am permitted to hate you. I just can't hate you for no reason. But if there's a reason for it, then I can't. And the same thing is true when it comes to speaking a lie. I can't lie when it comes to no reason, when it's simply deviating from telling the truth when there's no good cause. But if you get rid of the caffeine and you're trying to lie because you're promoting peace or maintaining peace because of confidentiality, privacy reasons, for modesty reasons, I've removed the reason that the Torah says it's prohibited, and now it's permitted. So big, big chiddush of Elchanan, and again, you'll make the same comment that it's far-reaching. Now, how do we define, and is there an algorithm for defining when I can hate somebody, when it is considered to be for the sake of peace, is very, very difficult to judge, and is very difficult to explain. But what Rabbi Wasserman is doing is expressing to us the basis of why Lishanos Mipnei HaShalom is permitted. Because there's a bigger, general, and broader reason behind the prohibition of Midvar Sheker Tircha. It doesn't mean that I have to be faithful and exacting when it comes to relating or reporting an event. That's not the reason. That's not why the Torah says that I can't, that I have to remove myself and distance myself from fallacy. That's not true. It's only because if I'm doing that for no reason. But if there's a reason to say something about somebody that's not true because it's going to cause and promote peace, then it's permitted. That's Rabbi Chaim's approach. It's a good question. It's a good question. Look, the Torah writes in a very pithy way. And the Torah just says, Midvar Sheker Chirkat. Distance yourself from telling the truth. The Torah doesn't explain why. But what Rabbi Wasserman does is simply tell us, I know the reason why. And I'm telling you that the Torah is telling you globally, all interpersonal negative commandments are only prohibited because there's no reason for it. There's no reason. But if you have a reason, and you're going to promote peace and maintain peace, then it's kedai. Then it's worthwhile because you're promoting peace. It's a very, very new and innovative idea. But not only is it true when it comes to truth and lying, it's true in a variety of all negative interpersonal mitzvahs. It's true when it comes to hatred. It's true when it comes to slander. It's true when it comes to aggrieving somebody. Onos dvar mitzvah is prohibited to aggrieve somebody else. But I can aggrieve a rabbi, a teacher, can aggrieve a student, if it's going to cause the student to study better. That doesn't mean you're going to sit with a chalk and go like that. But you can push the student. It's a grieving. The teacher's giving you a difficult time. What do you mean? Oh, not svarim. That's inappropriate. That's wrong. I could push the student in order for the student to be successful in their study. That the Torah didn't prohibit. That's Rabbi Wasserman's approach. The final approach I'd like to share with you is the approach of Rabbi Dessler, Zichron of Racha, Michtav Miliel. And this is probably the most dangerous of the three that I've addressed thus far. And Rabbi Dessler asks in source number 11 in the second column, Mao emes v'sheker, what is truth and what is lying? And he says that we have a very elementary and basic understanding, and almost an immature understanding of what truth is. As youngsters, we understood, She'emesu kishemistaprim uvdos kmosh iru. As we explain the traditional or the dictionary definition. Saying things exactly how they are, that's truth. V'sheker kishemishanim is that. And lying is the opposite of that. When I don't tell things the way they happen, when I don't relate to report information the way it was repeated or the way that it was told, that's a lie. Says Rabbi Dasso, that's a very immature, it's a very elementary and a basic understanding of truth. And he says, and I'm skipping a paragraph, and he expresses that emes huma shemevi letov vilarasan habara. You know what truth is? Truth is what brings out glory in the eyes of God. That's what truth is. So according to Rav Dessler, truth is not the here and now. It's not the means, but it's the end. It's the conclusion at the end of the day. Even though right now what I'm telling may not be true, if there's an element of truth and a kernel of truth that is going to ultimately grow and develop, that is truth. This, by the way, as he explains, is the story of Yaakov telling his father, Yitzchak, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. I mean, how could Yaakov do that? So he explains, that's not a lie. Ultimately, everybody knew that Yaakov should be the recipient of the blessings of Yitzchak, Tzibichas, Avram. Everybody knew that that was truth. Esav, he was a trickster, shyster. He wasn't the one who was appropriate to get the brachos. But ultimately, that's the truth. Now, of course, philosophically, this may be a very, very nice way to explain many of the stories in Sefer Bereishis with Yaakov Avinu. How this plays itself out in halacha is not so simple, but obviously it's critical to appreciate and to understand that there is an element of truth vis-a-vis outcome. So, maisa b'machshava tchila, whatever is the ultimate truth, even though right now I tell that person that your dress is very beautiful, but you really know it's not, if at the end of the day that's going to cause greater peace and harmony, it's okay to do that. Even though right now it's not truth, but I know for sure it's going to be a wonderful thing. Now, on the other hand, regarding the interview and the truth and the tie, maybe I do have to say something, and we'll talk about that as well. What I'd like to do now is go back to the five questions that we began with, and based upon our analysis, I'd like to try to reconcile and answer these five questions. The first question that we raised, if one is asked, what does that person think of me? Right, you're in the grocery store and you're talking to a friend and you see a third person over there and you ask the person, you know, what is that person, what is that man, what is that woman, what do they think of me? And I know for sure that that person thinks terribly of you, negatively, they speak terribly about you. Can I say, oh, wonderful, that person thinks you're terrific, you're lovely, you're fantastic, you're a star. Is that okay or is that not okay? That case, actually, the Chafetz Chaim addresses explicitly. You take a look in Source 12, Chafetz Chaim, Issuri Rechilos, Klal Aleph, Simen Ches, says, Uleinyin Malahashif, regarding what to respond, Im Sholom Adibra Ploni Odasi, if Reuven asks Shimon, you know, what does Levi think about me? And you know Levi thinks horribly. What do I tell Shimon? Tolui Bazet, it's dependent upon the following. Im Yeshlo Eitza Lahashivo, Ba'ofen Shlo Yesheker Gomer, if you have a way to respond where it's not going to be an outright lie, Vigam Lo Ye Rechilos, and there's also not going to be a problem of Rechilos, Yashivehu Ba'ofen Zeva Lo Yotzi Sheker Mepiv. Find a way to tell the truth in a way that it's not going to be affecting the veracity of your statement. If you could find a way to get out of it, that person did this, this, and the other thing. And that person said this, that, and that about you. Even though there is an element and a kernel of truth, better to say that than expressing outright, that person thinks you're terrific and you're great. But if your friend is smart than that and recognizes that you're not answering the question, you're just simply making a statement, and you're not responding to the question that was directly asked of you, says the Chafetz Chaim, halacha lemaisa, mutter, lomar sheker gamur mipnei hashalom. You're permitted to tell a lie for the sake of peace. You're permitted to tell the friend you're sitting next to, Levi thinks the world of you. Wonderful, terrific, fantastic, phenomenal, everything is great. Now note the word that the Chafetz Chaim uses. Does it say mutter or mitzvah? Mutter. You see the Chafetz Chaim is passing like the first daya in the Sechus Yivamas and Daf Zayin, okay? Not like Reb Nachman, not that it's a mitzvah, but that it's mutter. This is a critical Ma'ar Malkum because, as I said, we don't have a Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Emes and Sheker. But the Chafetz Chaim seems to be indicating that it's not a mitzvah, it's not a mandate, it's not a commandment, it's not something you must or require to do, but it's permitted to. As I said, if you take a look in general in the Chafetz Chaim, he uses the word mutter and mitzvah at times interchangeably. But this is the place where he says most articulately and expresses it most explicitly that it's mutter. So what emerges, according to the Chafetz Chaim, in any of the scenarios that we're going to address, if there's a better way to get out of it, if you don't have to say an outright lie, that's the best thing to do, because it's only mutter, it's only permitted. It's not a mandate, it's not a mitzvah, it's not a commandment. So if you can find another way to do it, find another way to do it. Get out of it.
Is there a difference between saying, I have no idea, or we've never discussed it, as opposed to going to the opposite extreme and saying he thinks you're great?
So Chafetz Chaim would tell you to do that first. He'd say better to do that first. Now, if you're dealing with somebody who's quicker than that, what? It depends if it's a lie. If you know that the person, do you know what the person thinks?
That's what the scenario
says. Do you know what the person? Yeah. So then it would be a lie. Yeah. Right. That's correct. In that case, then you are lying. But again, mutter l'shanos and p'nei hashof. You're permitted to do that for the sake of me. Would it be you're asking now? Would it be better to do that? It's the same thing at that point. But again, you have to recognize the situation that you're in. What type of person are you dealing with? And again, according to Shari Tshuva, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, I'm not benefiting anything. The person's not losing, so be absolutely permitted to do that.
Right, Rabbeinu Yonah and Rabbeinu Yonah also use heter as opposed to...
Yeah, the lines share opinion, and yes...
The Mishnah Me'aroh seems to be more of a mitzvah, but he transforms what truth, the definition of truth is.
The Shari Tshuva you could learn in a few different ways, because the Shari Tshuva does quote Rav Nassim's opinion. Oh no, he quotes Mutter, right. Right. That's what I said, the Mishnah Me'aliyahu is a philosophical point. Yeah, and it's hard to do that. It speaks to what you were mentioning before, in terms of what's really true and what's really not true. In terms of the halachic construct, so it does seem to be that if you could glean from most Rishonim and Achronim, when they're writing, they're using the language of Mutter as opposed to Mitzvah. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That's correct. You know what they said? That'd be a lie. But again, you know, you have to know the case in point. So that's why, let's go through the latter four cases that have. That's case number one. Chafetz Chaim would tell you at the end of the day, mutter, but if you have a way to get out of it before, better to get out of it before. If one is uninterested in lending a friend money, is it permitted to say, I don't have any money? So, interestingly enough, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zichron Vach, addresses this question, and he says it's permitted. And he says it's permitted because, what did I say? I don't have any money for you. For you, I don't have money. Because I'm nervous that I'm not going to get it back. I'm nervous that you're not good for your work. Moreover, if I start telling the person, you know, I really do have the money, but I'm nervous you're not going to give it back to me. I mean, that's going to cause animosity, that's going to cause hatred, and again, that's going to fall under the category of mutter l'shanos and p'nei hashalom, it'd be permitted to do that. That's the Shlomo Zalman Orbach's opinion. So it's true when it comes to any form of rental, any form of borrowing or lending anything, if there's any level of discomfort, awkwardness, embarrassment to tell the truth, so it'd be permitted to do that. Third case, if one is not interested in receiving guests, are family members permitted to say that one is not home? There's a fascinating contemporary work. It's called Titein Emes L'Yaakov. It's a collection of about 150 responsa on truth-telling and lying. His name is Rabbi Fish. He was somebody I sat next to in the Mir Yeshiva for a very long time, a wonderful American guy. And he researched for years truth and lying. And he asked this question to Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rabbi Yashiv Zichron Avracha, and they both told him that it's permitted to tell the person at the door, not home. Why is it permitted to tell the person at home? Based upon this Marmbav Messiah. There's certain matters of privacy that belong to me. I don't have to tell everybody where I am. I'm not required to say if I'm in the bedroom, if I'm in the shower, if I'm in my car from the first floor. Just because somebody knocks on my door doesn't mean I'm required to start telling you where I am and what I'm doing and what hour it is. Shlomo Zalman says that one of the great German rabbis, of David Zvi Hoffman, used to take a nap in the afternoon. And if somebody would come, he would tell his family members to say, I'm not home. And he would say that I'm preparing for the shir. How could he say I'm preparing for the shir? So he said, because I'm resting, I'm preparing for the shir. So if there's a way to say something where it could be understood in a different way, if Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, better to do that. So in that case, if you could say, I'm not available, the person's busy, that's the best thing to do. But again, if the person is not going to get it and they keep on harassing you and keep on knocking at it, when will he be home? When will she be available? When will they be finished? At that point, they can say the person's not home. Number four,
if one is not interested in eating a dish that was prepared, is it permitted to say I'm not hungry? So in this case also, based upon the Gemara and Bava Metzia, if there's any level of awkwardness or embarrassment in telling the truth, I'd be permitted again to deviate from telling the truth. So I'm going to make somebody feel bad. If somebody's going to be uncomfortable, or if it's milchix and I don't like fleshes, or let's say the food maybe is not up to your kashra standard, you could say I'm not hungry because it's going to create an awkward and uncomfortable situation. I'm permitted to deviate from telling the truth in a situation that's a private matter that I don't have to share with you. If it's something that is an issue of modesty, maybe your heksher is not the heksher that I think is an appropriate heksher, so I don't want to tell that to you that I have a higher standard of kosher. I have a different standard of kosher, but I'm being modest. I'm not hungry. Or for promoting peace, I'd be absolutely permitted to do that as well. Fifth, the last question. If one didn't like the taste of a particular dish that was served, is one permitted to say the food was delicious? What do you think? What? Yeah, why? I think I've been better, Raya. Kala Nava Chasuda. That should be even better, right? Kala Nava Chasuda. The bride is lame. She's blind. She's not delightful. She's not wonderful. I could say Kala Nava Chasuda. The food is not tasty. The food is not good. I ate it, it's finished. What's the point of telling somebody that the food was awful or was terrible? Now, if you think you could help the person and you could benefit the person by telling them something, okay, you could argue if that's true or not. But at the end of the day, that's the case. So just
to
conclude...
Going back to your question before, so in this instance, is it better not to say anything or do you have to go out of your way?
So the Gemara says in Ksuvis that if you, to gladden somebody, to make somebody feel better, you're supposed to say, Kal Mel Chasudas, to go to a wedding and just eat and to leave, and not say something positive and not to benefit the bride and groom would be inappropriate. So you should say something. So I think what I hope I've brought to your attention this morning is that the dictionary definition, the traditional definition of truth, is not faithfulness to fact or reality. And certainly the dictionary definition of truth is not always in sync with the halachic definition. Of course, when it comes to telling the truth, we want to tell the truth. Emes is primary and is the critical aspect, as we expressed at the beginning. But at times, there is the ability to deviate and to veer for telling the truth in order to promote peace, in order to maintain peace, in order to protect one's privacy, confidentiality, or modesty, not to embarrass myself or not to embarrass another person. And these are areas, again, that are tricky and not always clear in terms of the definition, but one has to keep these basic rules in mind in terms of answering the questions. Any questions I'm happy to take.
Under a different set of obligations, the same obligation when it comes to
reporting. Did you see? I just saw the Jewish Action. Everybody see that? The Jewish Action just had a piece from Rabbi J.D. Bleich about journalism and how journalists are permitted or how they should tell a particular story. I think the first thing he says is that every Torah journal should have a posek and to know what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be saying. Take a look. It's a fascinating interview that somebody did with him in terms of what should be reported, what shouldn't be reported, how to report things, how to share things. Of course, it will be different for a public figure versus a private citizen. A lot of those things are important to take into account. Now, journalism, of course, they're always telling the truth. But you'll keep that in mind. Yeah. So it's a good question. There is an element that I didn't address this morning of what's acceptable within the community, what standards are within a community. Now, when somebody says, how are you doing, they don't really mean how are you doing. So you respond, yeah, everything's great, but you're not going to start, you know, opening up all your issues. The same thing is true when it comes to the restaurant. You know, if it's really not good, so you tell the person, especially in better restaurants, that standard, if it's too raw, if it's not cooked well enough, that's what you do, and they're very pleased to fix the dish. You know, if you're eating in a, you know, a quick fast food place and you're telling them the chicken's not great, you know, that's your fault for buying your chicken for $4.99. You know what? What do you... Yeah.
First of all, I find it strange. I don't know if I would be choosing
is roommate. But I'd say, why is roommate mad at me?
Good.
So, what about the opportunity for most people?
Good question.
Not lending money. You know, I don't want to lend you money because you're showing yourself to be an unreliable person. I don't want to eat the dish that you prepare because, frankly, your kosher is needs some improvement.
So I think the answer to that question is dependent upon who you're dealing with and your relationship with that person.
Yeah, with all.
That's what it's going to come down to. You know, if it's a spouse, it's one thing. If it's a sibling, it's something else. If it's a congregant, it's something else. If it's an employee-employee relationship, it's going to be different. I'm not trying to sidestep the question, but I think it's very much dependent upon the relationship that you have with the person that you're dealing with. I think every, you know, you're married for 50 years. You could tell your wife, so, you know, the food's not great. You know, you've done better before. And nobody's going to be insulted. If you tell your bride of 3 weeks that the lasagna is terrible, I don't think that might not be the best idea.
Another balance here between not embarrassing somebody or maintaining show versus are we in a position to do this?
Agreed. That's
now we have a three-way
machlokes. Three-way machlokes is good. We're talking about Torah, it's fine. Okay, Yashar Koach to everybody. Thank you for coming. Have a good day. So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for coming. I like to see that book. If you,
yeah,
if you have
I think
it.
I think he uses a deathless.
He goes to the deathless. Again, my point is the deathless is very hard with halacha.
What's interesting is
Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Take care, be good, have a nice day.
I don't know how to do this. Good question.